Shinetti, and welcome to Inside Albania with me, Alice Taylor. This week, I have a special guest in the studio, and we're going to be tackling some rather difficult topics. Now, as you probably know, between 1998 and 1999, Kosovo and Serbia were engaged in a bloody war. During this time, more than 1 million Kosovar Albanians and other ethnicities were displaced. 20,000 people were raped by Serb military, and around 13,000 people were killed. We are still feeling the repercussions in the region of this war today, and tensions between Kosovo and Serbia continue to simmer with no end in sight. I'm joined in the studio today by Vasfija Krasnici-Gudman. She is an advocate against sexual violence, and she is an activist from Kosovo. She has a very harrowing story, and she's joining us today in an exclusive interview for Albanian television to tell us more. Vasfija, welcome to Inside Albania. Thank you for joining me today, and thank you for your time this interview. It's a pleasure to have you.
Thank you for inviting me.
Now, our audience is varied. There's Albania, Kosovo, but there's also a lot of people outside of Albania, people who are not Albanian, who might not be familiar with your story. So with the greatest sensitivity, can you tell me your story, which started, or part of it, which started on the 14th of April, 1999?
Yes, first of all, I would like to apologize to the ones. They already heard my story many times. It's not something that... They should hear it a lot of times, but for the ones that they haven't heard it, when I was 16 during the 1999 in Kosovo war, I was abducted by a Serbian police officer, and I was raped by two persons.
And what happened after this? I mean, obviously this you were abducted and this horrific crime was committed against you. What was the aftermath of this? What happened afterwards for you?
Life changed, as in most cases, in most countries, people my age that were celebrating their 16th birthday. And for me, it was time to have to hide in the mountains and making sure I don't get captured again or abducted and raped. That was the biggest fear. It was getting raped again. Mm-hmm. I was not worried about being killed. As a matter of fact, I begged my rapist to kill me because I don't want to go through that torture. I'd rather been killed.
I don't know what to say to that. And your family, I mean, you made your way back to your family afterwards. And what happened sort of from that moment?
I made my way back home to my uncle's house. And then we went the next village to my sister's for the night. And then the very next morning, KLA fighters, they came and they took me to their KLA base where I testified. I gave my statement to the commander over there. And from that point, we stayed in the mountains. Almost all of the war ended in Kosovo. We were living in the mountains.
And then you left Kosovo at quite a young age. You went to the United States. How did that decision come about? What was it like going to the US, and what was life like once you were in America?
I left Kosovo when I was 18. It was a total shock, I can say that. Moving from Kosovo, going to United States, especially going to live in Arkansas, in a very small town in Arkansas. And I was traumatized from the war, and I didn't have any family there. I didn't have any friends. It was very difficult few years for me being there in the States. It was difficult to live it every day.
But, and you said to me earlier, I hope you don't mind me saying, you know, when you're, now it's home as well. The US is home. When you're there, you miss Kosovo. But when you're in Kosovo, you miss there. So you found yourself now in the States, yes?
I did find myself after I moved to Texas. Just outside of Dallas. Now I consider that as my home as well, as Kosovo is my home too.
Because, you know, now you say Arkansas, Texas, I almost detect a slight accent there, you know, when you speak.
I do have an accent and I'm planning on keeping it.
No, I like it. It's my friends in England say when I speak, they hear me speaking with a foreign accent, a kind of Albanian accent slightly. Yeah. It's inevitable. So, in 2015, And I want to talk about stigma. In 2015, you were the first person who, having survived sexual assault during the war in Kosovo, you were the first to speak out and like publicly. And this was huge, not just because of the personal courage it would take any individual to speak publicly about any kind of violation. You know, that alone is a huge step. But in the context of Kosovo, this Albanian society, even I believe any woman who would suffer sexual assault, it's difficult for her to speak up, let alone also in the context of the war. Can you explain a bit more for our listeners about why this step was so crucial, why this was such a big step for you and for other survivors of sexual assault?
Yes, but I'll have to correct you. It was not in 2015. It was in 2018, 19 years after the crime, where I decided to go back home and speak up publicly without covering my face or changing my name. And I was the very first survivor to do so. In Kosovo, they heard a lot of stories of sexual violence during the war, but it was always, they changed their names, they hid their identity, they changed their voice, and I was the very first one to put a story and name together, and it had a huge impact in our society.
What was that impact, and why was it so huge?
To me and to all the survivors, is we want our stories to be heard. Mm. We went through a crime that is not talked about, even in a peace when there is a sexual assault. People tend to hide those sort of crimes. Mm-hmm. They don't talk about it because it's such a taboo in any country, any yes. religious, any background people. They don't talk about sexual violence in any form. And so for me, it was important to speak and give the voice to survivors, if not to share with the public, at least be able to share their stories with their family, with their partners, with their parents, with their children. And it's always it was a huge step for survivors in Kosovo and around the world to have somebody to open publicly.
And is there more of a stigma in Kosovo, you think, than some, I mean, I'm from the UK, than in the UK, for example? Is there more of a stigma around these types of things, maybe because of the culture or religion? Is this a factor in some way?
Yes, it is. I have met survivors from all different countries, all different wars, even the survivors from World War II. Mm-hmm. It took them 50 years to speak up. But in Kosovo, so far, it's been almost 6 years since I spoke up in public, and we only have one more survivor that she denounced the crime publicly and mm-hmm. said that I'm a survivor as well. And we don't have any other survivors to join us. The difference between Kosovo survivors and survivors from different countries, in different countries, they're more open about it. There is more survivors. They come forward and they speak. For example, in DRC, there is a movement, 7,000 survivors, they speak about it. And I'm hoping we get to see some changes in Kosovo because we do need to hear their stories as well.
Yes, of course. I mean, I've seen it in the media, you know, and I know it's a bit different when there have been cases where women have been raped and the media, it's a mess. You know, they publish the picture of the woman, they publish the family name, they say, oh, well, she provoked him, she did this. You know, they really make it. And I can imagine if you're somebody who has experienced a crime like that, that would put you off from ever wanting to speak out about it because you'd be scared. You're going to end up being the subject of gossip in the media.
That's how I see myself to that. Quite often, even a lot of people in Kosovo, they call me or they see me as a hero for speaking up. We do have the other people where they gossip and talk about me. Just a few days ago when I was arriving in Pristina and I was going through the security at the airport, I can see and I can hear people talking about, like, pointing to me, oh, the rape victim. And that's not something that you do want to hear coming from your own people, especially for the crimes that Serbia committed against our will. And it's shameful that we do get blamed.
How do you react when somebody, you know, in earshot, do you just pretend you didn't hear it? Do you confront them? Do you look them in the eye? I mean, how do you deal with it?
Most of the time I try to ignore it. Mm-hmm. Just pretend like I didn't hear it and just go on about my way. And because I don't want a conflict. I don't want to have to start talking about it. And it's just best to ignore it.
To ignore it. Yeah. It's you also addressed, so after talking about it in Kosovo, you addressed the United States House Committee on Foreign Affairs as well. And this added, I think it's fair to say, a more global awareness to what happened to you. And but how was that for you as well in terms of dealing with the attention, but also did you feel it was another step necessary to further break down that stigma?
I'll have to say that that was probably the most difficult statement I gave when it was in U.S. Congress. It was very difficult for me to share my story with American people. But I wanted to and hoped in the United States would be able to help me in some ways to get justice, especially since I'm a U.S. citizen. Mm-hmm. And we were moving in the right direction. But with the COVID happening and everything else, we had a resolution and it was put in the back burner for now because with everything going on, the Ukraine war and Israel. So, but we're still going to do whatever it takes to have the resolution passed in Congress and to hold Serbia accountable for those crimes they have committed.
Are you worried because there could potentially be a change of government in November? Could this impact this resolution?
I got no comment for that. I can't comment on that.
No, that's all right. It just came into my head then. I was thinking, I hope it doesn't. So this resolution, is this something you think it may be passed or presented in the next few months? Or is it do we know when it might?
We're working on it. We don't know if it's going to happen in the next few months or in 2024 or 25. But we're working on it really hard. Me and a colleague of mine, Vera Mieko, we're working on that.
Good luck.
Daily. Thank you.
Now, on April the 14th, President Vjosa Osmani, the president of Kosovo, she declared April the 14th as the Day of Sexual Violence Survivors. The name is obvious, but can you explain a bit more about what this day represents, what it's about, what its aims are as well?
The main focus, the aim is to raise awareness that we do have a lot of survivors. We do have other days for example, for the veterans, for all massacres, for missing persons, but we don't have anything for the rape survivors. So it was a huge step for my country to have a day to remember the victims that we have lost and the survivors that we're mm-hmm. dealing with. We're fighting a war within ourselves.
And I was right, it's around 20,000 people, men and women.
Including children, yes.
And children that are. And out of these, only two have spoken out publicly with their names, yourself and one other person. Do you think other people may come forward publicly? Or do they, maybe they think it's not going to change anything at this point in time? It's too late.
I talk to a lot of survivors on a daily basis. And most of them, they say, Vasfia, I wish I had your courage or your support. Your family mm-hmm. support, so I can share my story, because nobody wants to live the story and keep it inside themselves. It's something, it's almost some sort of liberation when you do share it and you get it off your chest, the story. But family is a big issue when it comes to survivors speaking up because they don't support that.
No. I am on the board of a charity that works supporting the victims of human trafficking mm-hmm. once they're returned to Albania. And I was horrified when I heard these stories of young girls who've been sex trafficked and, you know, subjected to horrific things in the UK. And then when they're returned to Albania, mm-hmm. their families disown them because they see it as a shame. They blame the... Or even if they don't blame them, they're like, oh, but the neighbours will. And I just can't understand how you could, like, I'm a mum. If my daughter came to me and said, like, if she said I've been raped or assaulted, to turn around and say to her, it's your fault. Mm-hmm. I don't understand how people can do this. Sorry. Can you shed a bit more light on this? Because to me as a foreigner, this is an alien concept.
I'm a mother myself. I have two daughters. And when I was abducted, when I was being raped, the only thing that kept going through my head was, what is my mom doing or thinking? Because she didn't know if she was ever able to see me again. And now that when you're a mom and you understand better, now it's something that I hold to my heart that I just wish I could have talked to my mom a little bit more about it, because I think my mom died of a broken heart because of what happened to me. That's how I see it. And yeah, it's very difficult. I can imagine my family disowning me for something that happened to me against my will.
It's, I can't understand it. Now, you have pushed in the US and in Kosovo for support and justice for survivors. In Kosovo, what more needs to be done? What more support do we need? What more momentum do we need to push for justice?
Quite a bit in Kosovo. As we said earlier, we have 20,000 survivors. Only one was convicted last year or 2 years ago, and we have about 45 pending cases. Survivors, when there is no justice, and they hesitate to come forward and report their crimes, which I think is a huge step. We need to report those crimes. We need to seek justice, because without justice, we're never going to have peace in Serbia. I just don't see that us ever having a peace without those criminals being brought to justice and being held accountable for those crimes.
I think as well, if people are brought to justice, it sends a strong signal to the rest of society. You know, if they are, if they have these views that they blame the victim or something, if you can say, actually, no, this person has been convicted, they are a criminal, except, you know, this is his face, this is what he did, you know, I think maybe that can help in breaking down some of this stigma as well. But is this a problem in Kosovo with the justice system? Is it a problem with the police? Is it things, does the justice system move too slowly? Does there need to be more pressure on the government? What needs to be?
I think in Kosovo, we kind of forget very soon what happened during the war, all the crimes that were committed. We almost were liberated, and all of a sudden nothing else mattered. And I don't agree with that. We should have started fighting for justice since 1999. That's when I start fighting for justice. That's when I seek justice. Even though in my case I didn't get justice, but at least I started 1999 before most people even had the courage to seek justice. Kosovo, they do have to make quite a bit of changes in order and Serbia to bring the perpetrators or send them to Kosovo. But we don't have any sort of relations with Serbia where they're going to send the criminals back.
No.
And now in Serbia, they glorify the criminals.
As we saw recently with the 24th of September attack.
You
know, they had 3 days of mourning, wasn't it, for three people that carried out a terrorist attack and killed a policeman.
But that's Serbia for you. They denied all the crimes that they were committed. They always play the victim.
Yes, and they say they would never extradite anyone to Kosovo because they don't recognise Kosovo. Yeah. And it seems to me as well, you know, so much now of the focus is on, and rightly, yes, the issues with Serbia, recognition, membership to Council of Europe, EU, security, these things. And this is important. But yeah, there doesn't seem to be attention on these crimes that were committed. I mean, there are talks. There is the occasional mention of, OK, the countries must resolve the issues of missing persons, etc. But no one's talking about these horrific crimes that were committed. And 20,000, I mean, even if it's two people, that's two people too many. But 20,000,
yeah.
I mean, this is... this is huge.
I blamed all the government and families too for those crimes because everybody swept it under the rug and we didn't talk about it enough.
And this makes it even harder because rape in any country is one of the hardest crimes to prosecute.
Yes.
To prove, to, I mean, I don't know off the top of my head, but the conviction rate for rape in European countries, in the US, is very, very low. Let alone in a war context as well, in a society where everyone wants to push it under the table. How can this challenge be overcome? The issue of evidence, burden of proof, this sort of thing. Is it just testimonies we have to rely on at the moment?
Yes, testimonies, and we have to... those cases have to be reported and keep a track of all those cases. But... we have to teach younger generations of those crimes that they did occur. They do occur in every war, and hopefully have punished the perpetrators harsher punishment to prevent that from happening in other wars. But it happens as we speak. It's happening And it happens everywhere.
It's used
where
as
there
a
is
weapon.
A war, there is a conflict, mm-hmm. there is always a rape, and nobody can say otherwise.
No.
It always happened everywhere.
Now, you mentioned earlier there were 45 cases pending.
Yes.
Was that right? So we've had 45 cases pending, one or two convictions in total?
One conviction. And one is in the process of they're going through a trial. The second person is going through a trial as we speak.
I mean, that's just out of 20,000.
Out of 20,000.
And that's just 20,000 people. That's not 20,000 times. It's, you 20,
know. 20,000 persons, yes.
Yeah. This is, do you know from your own experience with survivors how many more are potentially considering to start a case? Do we have any statistics on that? Aside from the 45, are there any others who are maybe ready to take that step?
It's difficult to say. If somebody was to win a case, it will be easier for the survivors to seek justice now if the perpetrators are going behind the bars. But then if they look at my story and say, look, Vasfia, she's been fighting since 1999. Mm-hmm. She never got justice. What's the point of us speaking up 25 years later?
But if someone does want to speak up, I mean, do they go to their local police station? Is there someone who can help them? Where do they go? Maybe they don't have the money for a lawyer.
We do have NGOs that they deal with survivors. And then legal aid is provided free of charge, pro bono for survivors of sexual violence. It's a pro bono mm-hmm. from all the lawyers. So
they don't have to go and find a lawyer who will take the case. They can contact specific groups such as...
Yes, they will go to NGOs. We have four licensed NGOs. They go to them and then they direct to the, you know, where they need to report it to the war mm-hmm. crimes unit. And that's how...
So they will be supported
the whole way out.
And we talked earlier, well, we touched very briefly just on, you know, how Serbia glorifies and denies everything. They deny war crimes, they deny genocide, they deny massacres, they glorify the people who were involved in them. Members of the Milosevic regime are still in positions and are being paraded around Paris, meeting presidents and off to Brussels and smiling for photos. And how does that make you and other people, and I don't mean just survivors of sexual violence, but people who've had their families massacred or have missing persons. It must be a slap in the face for you to see this going on.
It is a slap in the face when we see that happening. And the international committee doesn't do enough that needs to be done to hold Serbia accountable for those crimes. It's almost like everybody's relying on Serbia to play the victim. In all the wars that Serbia has started and lost, all of them, Serbia always plays the victim.
Yes, and the EU's like, hello, come into our house, here you are.
Yeah.
But Kosovo, you're naughty, so you can have some measures put on you.
Yeah.
Doesn't seem particularly fair.
It doesn't seem fair, no, it's not fair.
It's like congratulating the aggressor. Look, if Serbia didn't have someone like Vucic in power and people in these key positions who are linked to that previous regime, I might be able to say, okay, it's a new generation of power, of control, of government, of people. Let's try and move up. But it's not, and the tactics are the same. I had an assistant minister from the Serbian government sexually harassing me on Twitter via direct message. And I'm like, how? And then verbally assaulted, like being verbally violent to me outside, like just on the tweets when I was tweeting about Kosovo. And I was like, you are using your official profile and you are sending me sexually harassing messages, direct messages, and making disgusting... Like, what mentality is this? Can you imagine if a US senator, I'm sure it happens, but was being verbally violent to a female journalist on Twitter? It would be outrage. There, they don't care.
Twitter is a whole different story because I get attacked by Serbians, I get attacked by Americans, and even well-known names, Americans, that...
You can say the name. I've talked about him on the show before.
Yeah, so it's we're always going to have people like that, and I just refuse to mention their names and give them a space in my head because we're always going to have riches in this world, and that's all I got to say for that.
Thank you. Yes, I feel very strongly about this. Now, you were voted into Parliament in 2021, and you were one of the most voted MPs, which is great, but you are no longer in Parliament. And I wanted to ask, What was your experience in politics like, and do you prefer activism? Do you think activism is more effective?
I prefer activism, yes. Due to the health reason, I resigned from politics, and that's not something I'll ever pursue again. But I will continue being an activist and fighting for justice and speaking up in stigma. But I won't. Politics is not my scope. I will never do politics.
You tried it. You went,
no, thank you very much. I'm done.
I'll ask you more about that later. No, I've had people say to me, have you ever thought about it? I'm like, I've thought about it. And then I've gone, no way. I don't think I could.
It's a big headache.
No. Now, I wanted to ask as well, you have... been in Kosovo for the 14th of April, which was the day for survivors of sexual violence. And I wanted to ask as well, what other sort of days there are for this type of thing, how people can support you and what you're doing. Tanya Domi was in Kosovo as well. And I want to find out a bit more about what people can do to support you, them, the wider issue, etc.
The main thing people can do is hear us, not just listen, but actually hear us with your heart when we're telling our stories and support survivors. And then we have to financially support survivors so we can empower them, so they don't have to be stuck in a, let's just say, in a loveless marriage or trauma, so they can be able to continue with their life without being dependent on their spouses or their parents, mm-hmm. so they can freely live their lives. I do have a foundation back in the States. It's a nonprofit organization for it's strictly to help survivors financially to get on their feet if their family disowns them, and to spread awareness for sexual violence. And Tanya Domi, I'm very good friends with her.
She's great.
She's a board member on my organization. And we were just in Israel last month to meet survivors there, sexual violence. And yeah, it was quite a bit of a trip for Tanya too.
She talks a bit about it on my show. What was it like for you having had your own experience as well, you know?
In Israel?
No, yeah. So you've had your experience in Kosovo, you know how it is. And then to go there and to see it, sort of the aftermath.
Unfortunately, we did see some aftermath, but I didn't have the chance to meet any survivors of sexual violence. Because most of them, they were raped and they were killed. So, and ones that they're alive, they refuse to speak. And I understand that not everybody, it took me 19 years to speak. I don't go any place to tell survivors, you got to speak now.
No, of course.
Survivor has to be ready to speak or share their story whenever they're ready, not when society wants to hear it. So we have to give space to survivors to feel safe and share the story when they're ready, just like I did.
But what did you see on this trip? You weren't meeting with survivors. What was your experience? Like, where did you go? What did you, what were you involved in?
They took us to the sites where quite a bit of the killing happened and the rapes. Like I said, I didn't see any survivors, so I don't have any stories to share on that. They were killed.
It must have been especially difficult experience for you as well, having been through that.
It is, and being a survivor yourself, even now when you see from the other side, because sexual violence happens in both sides. And when you see the soldiers and they're taking photographs with women's clothing and everything else, and that to me is, in some ways, it's an assault as well.
Yes, of course.
Because what's the point if you're going there to fight a war? You're not going there to take pictures of women's clothing and showing off. So I don't like that.
Now I want to ask you, as we come towards the end, what would you, I have a few questions like this to ask, but if there's anyone listening or watching who has survived any form of sexual violence, whether it's in a war zone or not, what would you want them to know?
We have to have a thick skin. Not everybody believes the stories. And in most cases, it's my word against his word. And that's that's difficult to swallow for a survivor, and that's why they keep silent, because, or if they believe you, they're gonna blame you, they're gonna ask, what were you wearing, what were you doing? When I was abducted, I was at home, I was 16, I was not out in the streets, I was at home. So they, you know, they're trying to avoid from being judged and being blamed for the rape. So for the survivors, not just for in a war, but even at peace, they have to be strong, they have to have a thick skin, and always fight for justice.
And there's help there if they want it.
Oh yes, the help is the help is there, yes, if they want it, yes.
And what would you say to those people who judge people who survive this, who speak out, who say, oh, well, she was wearing a short dress, or she was, you know, all this rubbish they come out with?
I'm just going to say this. There is quite a bit of people, they do judge the survivors, like, they're known like me, that they have no idea their moms, their sisters, or their wives are victims as well, and they have no idea. Mm-hmm. But they easily judge me. So I will just... They have to make sure that within their first circle, second or third, they don't have victims. But in most cases, they all do. Mm-hmm. And they just don't know and they judge me.
And the last thing, to anyone who may be listening who has power to speed up some processes, put something right, to apply pressure in the right place, what would you want them to hear in your struggle?
They have to hold all those countries accountable for those crimes, and they have to have a stricter punishment, because the punishments are very, very light for one of those crimes. And the rape is a crime that is not talked about enough, and you're never going to have the exact number, because, like I said, we know they're killing so many people they have killed. We know how many are missing, because families, they talk about it.
Of course.
We know the damage that's been done. But when it comes to sexual violence, most of the people, they keep quiet, and we're never going to know the exact numbers in any wars.
Mm-hmm. Just out of curiosity, what is the... You said there was one case that was convicted and one that's in the process at the moment. What was the penalty?
Believe he got 13 years. He went out with the Supreme Court, and he got 13 years in prison.
That's quite...
Quite low.
Uh-huh.
Quite low, but it's better than, in my case, none.
Yeah, yes, so. This is. But I mean, I think like in the UK, I mean, I don't know, it tends to be less than double digits for it. Yeah. Or they might get, say, 7 years and it would be 3.5 with good behavior. You know, and this is an insult, you know. It's so 13, I mean, is there a chance that he would be let out before? Do they have a system like that in Kosovo? Or?
In Kosovo, yes, they do have a 5-year span where they can... reopen the case of the Supreme Court if the punishment they think is unfair. But I hope that's not going to be the case. It's not going to be the case with with those criminals. But 13 years, I think it's a low number. 13 years is a low number.
It should be 30.
For a rape, for a rape crime. So.
Fasfia, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
That's all for this week. Due to Formula One, our schedule is still a bit mixed up, so you can find out when Inside Albania is on air by checking out my Twitter or Instagram, Alice in Albania. You can watch us on Euronews Albania on our YouTube channel every Saturday and across all major podcasting platforms. Until next week, Mira Pafshin.